Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Wednesday, June 13th. No, 14th. Why does my agenda say the 12th?
Mine says the 12th,
okay.
Too.
All right. Well, it's the 14th, no matter what the agenda says.
Yep.
No worries. It is the 14th. Today is my uncle's 87th birthday. Happy birthday, Uncle Henry. And I am opening a meeting of the Joint Committee of Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services, and I am opening a public hearing on House Bill 3276. Ms. Ames.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3276 prohibits insurers from restricting coverage of health services necessary to combat disease outbreak or epidemic. It also directs public health to convene a task force to recommend changes to improve student health insurance coverage, as well as preparing for future public health emergencies by recommending changes to public health policies relating to vaccination. And I see Representative Nathanson.
Yes, Representative Nathanson. Thank you. I saw her walk in, I forgot, so thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from House District 13. In 2013, the University of Oregon campus in Eugene experienced a dangerous meningococcal disease outbreak. And earlier this year, an outbreak was identified at Oregon State University in Corvallis. This was not a one-time problem, and we should be acting quickly to protect public health, minimize danger, and also reduce costs to the public. The UO held vaccination clinics at the arena, the Student Rec Center, and at several residence halls. Besides the UO, pharmacies, private clinics, and the Lane County Health Department also offered vaccinations. At the UO, the outbreak happened during spring term. Many students, and now keep in mind this is a couple years ago, at the UO, it happened during spring term. Many students did not have easy access to their primary care or in-network physician who was in another town, could have been even in another state. And the university was confronted with the problem of having to quickly vaccinate thousands of students. Thousands of other students and community members visited different health providers or local pharmacies. More than 30,000 doses of vaccine were administered. Unfortunately, in many instances, the insurance companies refused to cover the vaccines, which placed an unbudgeted financial burden amounting to $533,842 to the university alone. There were those other entities also that were absorbing costs. Unbudgeted costs fell to Lane Community College, Lane County Health Department, and the Oregon Health Authority as well. One reason for refusing reimbursement was the insurer's requirement that vaccines be administered by the primary care or in-network physician. Cases of emergency like that at the UO or this year at OSU require quick intervention. It's unreasonable to expect people, especially students, to travel perhaps hundreds of miles away to visit their primary care physician or otherwise have quick access to an in-network physician. The most reasonable solution in an emergency situation is to allow people to obtain the vaccination outside of the network or from a provider, even if not their primary care physician, such as their university's health center or a local pharmacy. Another reason for the lack of reimbursement was the status of the relatively new meningitis B vaccine. The FDA had approved the vaccine in 2014, but because it was so new, it didn't yet have the label of, quote, recommended, giving insurers a reason to deny coverage. So what this bill does, it allows people facing an emergency disease outbreak to get the vaccine they need, when and where they need it, and makes sure that the insurers will cover the cost to the extent possible that we can require that by the state of Oregon. If the public health director identifies an urgent need to address a disease outbreak, epidemic, or other condition of health importance, the insurers must cover the people enrolled in their plans for the cost of the necessary pharmaceutical agent or measure, such as a vaccine, to prevent the spread of the disease or epidemic. The bill also makes sure that the insurer can't deny coverage just because the vaccine hadn't received the, quote, recommended status yet. As long as the vaccine or other prophylactic measure is FDA approved, the insurer should cover it. And to improve response and reduce cost in the future, this bill directs the Oregon Health Authority to work with public universities and other key stakeholders to increase student health insurance coverage, review vaccination policies to prevent and address potential emergency situations, and to identify opportunities to minimize the fragmentation of vaccine financing and delivery in an emergency. Those stakeholders, as outlined in the bill, include, but would not be limited to, representatives from public universities, local health authorities, the insurance division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, insurers, and CCOs. This bill certainly does not fix everything, but it moves us in the right direction, working to create better plans for health emergencies and better options for providing care to those who need appropriate medical care and reduce future costs to the public. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. Questions for the representative? Thank you. Thanks so much for taking the time to come testify. Dr. Cieslak, kind enough to come on up, and Libby Batlin and Jenny Halbenreiser. Did I get your name correct, I hope? Thanks. Dr. Cieslak.
Thank you, Chair Steiner Hayward and Ray Field and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Paul Cieslak. I'm the medical director for communicable diseases and immunization within the Oregon Health Authority's Public Health Division. Meningococcal disease, fortunately, and for reasons not related to any vaccine, has become an uncommon disease. We had 24 cases reported in the state of Oregon all of last year. Serogroup B is one of the types of meningococcal disease for which a vaccine, as was recently noted, was recently licensed. We had about 10 cases, or one case for every 400,000 Oregonians last year. Cases do disproportionately affect infants and adolescents, including college students. Nevertheless, the disease is pretty uncommon. And for that reason, the National Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices did not recommend it for routine use among either adolescents or among college students. And the reason for this has to do with cost effectiveness. It's about $300 to complete the series. And with the disease being so rare, the cost effectiveness of the vaccine just isn't there. CDC estimated it would cost about $9.4 million per year of life saved if we vaccinated all college students in the United States. Nevertheless, they made what's called a Category B recommendation, which means in certain circumstances, some people are going to be at higher risk, and one of those is during outbreak settings. So as you probably know, we've had two outbreaks within the state of Oregon going back to early 2015, one among University of Oregon students and more recently among Oregon State University students. So we haven't required this vaccine for college students or for anybody else, but when there's an outbreak, cases are happening quickly, and we're very interested that these high-risk groups of people get vaccinated and get vaccinated quickly. In both cases, we've run into problems with insurance coverage because although the federal regulations require that vaccines be covered in such situations when there's an outbreak, you know, we've run into the problems alluded to by Representative Nathanson. As a result, we vaccinated far fewer people than we had hoped. We had recommended vaccination of the 23,000 undergraduate students at the University of Oregon, especially targeting the 7,000 or so who lived in congregate living settings. And I think about 7,000 doses of the vaccine were administered totally in the state of Oregon, with about half of those going to Benton County people since the OSU outbreak. So far fewer than we had hoped, and we think that this represents a part of the problem, at least, is students being afraid that they're going to get socked with a big bill for it. I also want to endorse the notion of a task force. The time to get together with people regarding outbreaks that occasionally occur is not in the heat of the moment. We would like to be able to do planning around all sorts of outbreak issues well beforehand, and we'd be delighted to participate in such a task force. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Batlin.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, for the record, my name is Libby Batlin. I am the Senior Director of State Relations for the University of Oregon. I'm filling in today for Andre LeDuc, the university's Chief Resilience Officer, who couldn't be here, here in support of House Bill 3276. And just going to do a quick overview of the University of Oregon's experience in response to our meningitis outbreak in 2015. There were several recent outbreaks on college campuses. Princeton University in March of 2013, and later the University of California, Santa Barbara, in November of that same year. It's important to note that at the time of the Princeton and the UCSB outbreaks, no vaccine for protection against meningitis B was available in the United States, and soon after those confirmed cases, the FDA accelerated approvals of two meningitis vaccines in late 2014 and early 2015. Two additional outbreaks of meningitis B occurred on college campuses, seven cases at the University of Oregon and two at Providence College. The outbreak at U of O began on January 15th of 2015 and, according to CDC guidelines, concluded on May 27th, 2016. In mid-February 2015, the fourth case of meningitis B resulted in a fatality at the University of Oregon, and an outbreak was officially declared, and the university received a joint recommendation from the CDC, OHA, and Lane County Public Health to implement a vaccination clinic and vaccinate nearly 22,000 students as soon as possible. It's important to note that these outbreaks are not easily controlled once they occur. It requires significant coordination and planning among multiple stakeholders, and require significant human and capital resources. Because the vaccines were newly FDA approved and new to the market, they weren't readily available through county or state vaccine provision mechanisms, and therefore funding wasn't available to offset vaccine purchase costs that the university would incur. We reached out and contacted pharmaceutical companies requesting pricing information, as well as a fully supported clinic and vaccination-related services, since neither the university, the county, or the state at that time possessed resources to implement such a large-scale clinic that was needed, and with capabilities to bill insurance. We selected a vaccine manufacturer proposal that included a partnership with Safeway and Albertsons Pharmacies in the Eugene area, and the partnership helped achieve the goal of reducing as many barriers as possible to getting students vaccinated. In addition to the acquisition of the vaccines, the pharmacies were familiar with vaccine storage procedures and logistics that included appropriate refrigeration, and there was a refrigerated truck at the site of our immunization clinics. In total, as Representative Nathanson said, there were four mass immunization clinics that were held at Matt Knight Arena on our campus, as well as several smaller clinics during the summer and freshman orientation to make sure that incoming freshmen could have at least one round of a vaccination prior to beginning classes. Like I said, there was this a uniqueness to the challenge that U of O faced at the time of our outbreak, because it was very shortly after the FDA approval of the vaccines, but prior to broad-based insurance coverage. We ultimately ended up being able to cover 80% of those who were vaccinated, and the remaining 20% whose vaccines were not covered by insurance were the result of essentially four reasons. The student did not have insurance coverage. The student had become ineligible at the time of the vaccination, so they had an old insurance card and were no longer covered. The student's insurance was an HMO that required the vaccine to be given by a primary medical care provider. And then finally, the student's insurance coverage did not have a pharmacy benefit. We're grateful that Representative Nathanson brought this legislation forward on behalf of Safety and Risk Services at the University of Oregon, and all seven public universities were supportive of any efforts that can enhance our abilities to cover and vaccinate students and keep them as safe as possible on our campuses. And thank you for your work toward this end. I'll be happy to answer any questions, although admittedly this is not my area of expertise, so I'm going to kick it to Jenny. But
thank you. Let's let the rest of the panel go, and then we can ask questions.
Okay, thank you. Please. Good morning, Co-Chairs Hayward and Rayfield and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you. I'm the Executive Director, Jenny Hoppenreiser.
Thank you.
The Executive Director of Student Health Services at Oregon State University. And I appreciate the partnership that we have here, and also my gratitude to Senator Nathanson for bringing this forward. Having gone through that, we are really, truly the living lab of this discussion that we're having, because we're in it now. Our outbreak will be in effect until next February, We had our first two cases in November, followed by a case in February, which triggered the outbreak status and led to our mass vaccination events. First of all, I want to say that I am also speaking on behalf of 17 other colleges and universities in Oregon. This represents about 138,000 students. It's not a matter of if this will happen, it's when this will happen. So this is a critical time to reduce some of these barriers. I'll also tell you that the bill is broad. This affects community health providers as well. But college health centers are uniquely positioned to respond to these types of situations. We do it in deep partnership with our county and with our state officials, but we're kind of the boots on the ground and actually reaching these students. That's what our purpose is. That's what we're here to do, is to protect students and to remove any barrier. We had these three cases. We're very grateful that these students have recovered. We're also grateful that we don't seem to be having the same trajectory that U of O had in terms of the number of cases and getting out there very fast. And we all learn from, because these outbreaks are happening all over the country. As Dr. Cieslak mentioned, this is now recommended by the CDC. So we know that this should be covered. Whether it's covered at a college or university health center is a different question. Most health centers are, actually all student health records are protected under a law called FERPA, not HIPAA. Campuses can be HIPAA compliant, but that requires a lot of administrative functions. FERPA, if you don't know that, is sort of the HIPAA equivalent for higher education. It protects student education records, and the student health record is protected under FERPA. This makes it very difficult to contract with private insurance companies. And I can tell you, as just a point of compare and contrast, we have a student-sponsored student health plan, Aetna Student Health, where we've contracted. Every dollar that we've billed for vaccine reimbursement through our sponsor plan, which we're contracted with, has been reimbursed. For the private insurances and the CCOs, not the case. We still have a lot of claims unpaid. This has just been a massive operation. I can tell you it's been interesting to describe this experience to people, because you think of bringing in the immunizers and that this is really a medical operation. It turned into an insurance operation. I would say 60-70% of our efforts were put into managing these network limitations. In some cases, an insurance plan would cover it as a pharmacy benefit, in some cases as a medical benefit. In some cases, we had our School of Pharmacy was able to participate with us and were able to cover some of these. But when the student waits up to 90 minutes in a line and they get up and find out, sorry, claim denied, or it's going to be covered as a medical benefit, not a pharmacy benefit, so you're kicked to the back of the line. Students are highly sensitive to cost, as are their families, and they're highly sensitive to convenience. Sending them into the community or to a home CCO is just not going to work. So I quickly put together a few numbers for you last night, because we're still trying to keep our regular operations going, too. It's quite a challenge. At Oregon State, we've been able to deliver about 4,500 doses through student health in the pharmacy. Let's see, 64% of these vaccinations were billed to private insurances. Some students actually just paid. We had parents calling. It's just like, pay the damn thing. We don't want to have to hassle with this. And I understand that for students, but this is not cheap. This is a $320 dose. I'm talking about the Bexsero here. The total amount that we have billed for Bexsero, and to remember the two doses, is almost $400,000. What we've gotten back by insurance payments right now is about $164,000. So these are dollars that are now on students' account. So the reimbursement was everything from zero to the full amount. Our sponsored plan paid the full amount, and everything in between. A lot of these, and I just brought this as a visual aid, these are the claims that we're now working. We have about 1,000 of these claims that we're working. We calculated last night, it's costing the Student Health Service about 300 hours or 2 months of a 1.0 FTE just to manage these insurance claims. So that's what's happening. So I think this bill, I know this bill, would eliminate a major barrier in these operations.
Questions for this panel? Representative Hayden, then Senate Representative Alonzo Leon, Representative Malmstrom.
Thank you. No? You mentioned that students are highly sensitive to the cost of health insurance. Oregon has achieved approximately 95% population covered in health insurance, and ACA has provided that insurance to be extended to 26 years of age. So who are the students that either don't have health insurance on campus or has lapsed for some reason, it seems to be the same category, or have an HMO plan or have a individual plan through the school? Who are those students?
Co-Chair Senator Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Hayden, I would need to go back and talk with our health center folks and our chief resilience officer to get you the exact right answer and what that population and scope looks like.
And to follow up on that, is the cost of gaining that insurance if they're not covered through their folks or something a significant barrier to them?
I can respond to some of these. Yeah, co-chairs and committee. Yeah, it's you're asking really compelling questions. When the Affordable Care Act came online and students were able to be covered by their parents' plan or through employers or through the exchanges marketplaces, the role of a student sponsored plan was actually called into question. Our sponsored plan has been required for international students. So imagine the barrier for an international student. And the state has actually required that those students are covered, so that's why most campuses have some type of sponsored plan. The issue here is the network. So students are coming in from all of these private insurance plans that is on their parents. Those plans will say, yes, we will cover the cost of that vaccine, but you have to have that provided by an in-network provider. And because of our HIPAA status, we're not able to become in-network, nor would we be able to become in-network and contract with however many plans show up. A lot of these are from out of state, and that's another barrier here that wouldn't necessarily be covered by this bill. A lot of Medicaid students from California, for instance, has been a challenge. Students are still not insured. Quite a significant number of students are not insured. Older students, students over the age of 25, students who are underemployed. Or in some cases, these insurance plans, they should, if they're insured at all, this benefit should be covered. But it's you have to either leave campus and find a private provider or you have to go to a home CCO. So the coverage is there, and that's been my issue. If this is a covered benefit, why can't they pay that at a student health service where we're in a position to provide this at the most affordable, economical, efficient, convenient way? Or I would include the county health boards are also positioned to respond at a community level very effectively.
Just quick follow-up. You mentioned students on Medicaid. One of the gaps, as I would call it, that I would like to see fixed, a child or a young adult that has been in the foster care system from another state is not extended the 26 rule in all cases here in Oregon. So if they come from California or another state, they don't have funds to pay for that. What do you do maybe at the University of Oregon or public health to help those students achieve health care insurance since we have yet to break down that barrier for them?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Hayden, another great question that I would need to talk with our subject matter experts who are on the ground doing this work every single day, and I can get back to you after this hearing. I know we work with our students who have come from the foster care system in lots of ways. I would just need to look specifically into how we help them make sure that they're covered in this way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And to add to that, one executive decision I think we could say is we did not want any student to leave our clinics unvaccinated. So we have actually allocated some of our reserve funds to be used for emergency purposes. We also had access to VFC, vaccines for children, for, you know, I don't know if that had to be an Oregon resident.
If I might jump in here, Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, it goes through 18 years of age. Yeah. So if the student is in that age group, they could be, and they're uninsured, they could be covered by VFC, federal entitlement.
Federal entitlement. There's many ways to work around this. University of Wisconsin and Madison had an outbreak. They actually got federal funds to provide the first dose of Bexsero free of cost. Absolutely no barriers. So they were able to immunize up to 20,000 students free of cost. They did not get that funding for dose two. So that left the students holding the bag for dose two, which is you need for,
you know. Representative Alonso Leon.
Thank you. Representative Hayden asked the questions I was going to ask. Thank you.
Sorry.
But I guess since some of those questions are going to come back to us, I'm looking forward to the responses. But I do want to acknowledge that this is a very important topic, that we should absolutely make it possible for all students not to worry about getting sick at school. And we need to streamline a system, an insurance system, that helps make sure that all students who attend the our universities in Oregon make it possible for them to be covered. We know that it takes one student who gets sick, and that can easily spread across campus and beyond, because we know that a lot of our students are parents, and then their children also get impacted. So I appreciate the questions you asked, Representative Hayden, and I appreciate the efforts on this bill and the task force that will be that will be gathered, or the information that will be gathered based on this this task force. It's very important. We need to create as I mentioned, a streamlined system so that students, this is not something that they have to worry about when they choose a university to attend, especially in our state.
Representative Mastrom.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, all right. Very good.
I have a question. Can I come back in? Sorry.
You can't leave and come back in and ask questions.
I think we asked it.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. Never mind then.
Here, I'll have you calling yourself.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much. Thanks for taking over. This is the time of year when you get urgent phone calls that you know you have to answer. Two questions I had. One relates to the issue of CCOs. And Dr. Cizlak, as the OHA person at the table, I don't really expect you to be able to answer this question. I see Mr. Black in the back of the room, so I may ask him to come up and answer this. This bill doesn't officially cover CCOs and say anything about if a person, I mean, a U of O student could be from any CCO in the state, right? Or same with an OSU student. So do we have any assurance from the health authority that this is going to apply to CCOs too? Because it should.
Senator Steinway Hayward, I don't know, and I'll defer to Mr. Black.
Lifeline. While Mr. Black's coming up, I'm going to ask the two university representatives another question, which is this. You know, one of the issues that we have with immunizations in general is getting the whole series into people. Mm-hmm. And one of those vaccines is a 3-shot series, one's a 2-shot series, if
That's
I remember
correct.
Correctly. And I just am curious if you have any way of tracking and doing recall. I mean, kids go home for the summer, all sorts of things, and how we're doing on actually making sure they get the full protection. Because I don't remember what the seroconversion rates are for those vaccines, but there's a reason that they're 2- or 3-shot series and not 1-shot series. So how are we doing on the recall piece and making sure they get their full series? Mm-hmm. Do we know?
Senator Steiner Hayward, I'll address that initially, and then I'll defer to my colleague. That is the challenge. One reason that we really went hard with the Bexsero is it's 2-dose rather than 3-dose. Mm-hmm. A challenge we have, and again, this is a FERPA issue, although we're finding a path around this, we know how many doses we gave at Oregon State University. We don't know if they got a second dose over spring break from a community provider. And so we're now in partnership with the Alert Registry and finding a way to release our student information, run that through the alert system that would give us a complete number on how many received a full dose.
So, okay, that begs an interesting question before Ms. Batlin answers. university health services or situations like this are not required to put their immunizations into alert?
Yes, they are. But if, since we're talking about a 2 or 3 dose series, if they got one dose with us and another dose in the community,
so
we would have no
So you can't pull it down either?
Correct. Correct.
Because other medical practices can pull down information from ImmuAlert. We're all allowed to, because I know that we do it in our practice. We have a direct link, in fact, in our electronic health record.
Well, it's the student identified data, which is protected information.
It's health data,
it's health
though.
Data.
Yeah, well, great minds, Senator. I think that's an issue, and it's, we should take this offline, but I think that's a huge issue. And Dr. Cieslak, I want to put that on your radar, too, because that's a problem. That's not educational information that's covered by FERPA. That's HIPAA. And ImmuAlert already has a HIPAA waiver for this kind of stuff. That's a real problem if that's how that's being interpreted. Mr. Black, CCOs.
Sure. For the record, Justin Black from the Oregon Health Authority, Co-Chair Steiner here with Co-Chair Rayfield. Yes, so the bill sets up a process for us to continue kind of working on this problem and setting up a process so that we can make sure this is extended to CCOs. It's the intent of the agency and I think everybody at the table to make sure that CCOs are included in this conversation and that students who are members of CCOs have the same access as other students.
Okay. Ms. Batlin, I'm not going to put you on the spot because I know that the medical piece is not your expertise, and Ms. Havenrice's explanation, I think, was sufficient. But I kind of wanted to get it on the record that it's tricky, but it did bring up this very interesting issue around alert, and I'm very disconcerted to hear that because that totally blows the value of having a statewide immunization registry if you guys can't pull data out of it.
And this is what we're working around now, is to find the appropriate FERPA release for the university to release the student records that we can run through the alert system. Because the alert system has all of that data. We just haven't been able to marry the student health data with that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have confidence that the health authority is going to be working actively with all of the states' institutions of higher education to solve that issue, because that's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Mr. Black?
Just for the record, I think I want to build on what Dr. Cieslak said earlier is, you know, the best time to do this kind of work is not in the middle of an outbreak.
Right.
And I think that is the intent, is that, you know, as we kind of work through the outbreak that's at OSU and hopefully before the next one, have some time to really work out these systems to make sure, because I know, you know, when it happened at U of O, you know, there were people flying around and trying to do this as quickly as possible in the middle. So this really sets up the opportunity for us to work on this problem.
Good.
Yeah. Senator Winters? Just to add, I think this is an opportunity, actually, to begin looking at all the systems and what are the barriers or problems in that system, you know, and then, you know, with the OHA, you know, to begin to work on the alert system and others, because, you know, when an outbreak occurs, you cannot at that point in time begin to try to figure out whether the system is functional or not. And so it seems to me that, you know, that this has brought to our attention a number of issues that should be a part of this, you know, if the task force goes forward. And this is really, I think, one of the most critical ones. So.
Representative Luntz, that didn't sound like a question. That sounded like a statement. Did you need an answer to that?
No, I didn't. No, it was a statement.
Thank you. Good. Cool. Representative?
So understanding that, thank you, Co-Chair, understanding that not all students have insurance, right, and that these kind of emergencies are bound to happen, so this is a question for the task force. How can we guarantee to help these students have some sort of insurance so that 100% of our students are covered in some capacity? So that's a big question I want you guys to work on, because we cannot have any student leave because they think they cannot afford it.
Exactly.
Right. And I will say, Representative, just as an FYI, that when we had this outbreak at U of O last year, the state committed funds to help ensure that every student who needed an immunization got one, and the state has made that commitment on an ongoing basis, because we don't want the university to end up picking up an unexpected tab for $400,000, and we don't want students to go unimmunized for want of money or insurance. So nobody's been turned away from getting an immunization.
And during U of O's outbreak, there was a safety net put in place that the university would pick up the cost if there was a student who did not have coverage or whose insurance did not cover the vaccination. So any student who received a vaccination, it was at no cost to them. But it was incurred cost by the university.
So. Yeah, and I understand that, and I'm super thankful that we have those safety nets in place.
Right. Yeah.
But I think that for future, we want to make sure that every Absolutely. Single student is covered in some capacity so that we are not trying to run around and figure out how can we help the student, or that parents aren't stressing out that they can or can't afford to help pay their child's immunization. Does
that make sense? And Representative Leon, let me add an important point, because yes, we have safety nets. It's getting students in the door. If they perceive there's a barrier, if
okay.
the parent perceives there's
right.
a barrier, they won't even come.
Thank you. Exactly. Representative Bueller, and then we're going to have to wrap up this panel, because we have one more panel, and I know some people have meetings at 9:30. So,
yeah. More just a comment, you know, as we talk about how students are so sensitive to the to cost, mm-hmm. not only of going to university, but also the health care. Keep in mind, colleagues, we just have on the table a proposal and passed a 1.5% premium tax that would hit students. And considering they're so sensitive to those costs, I'm concerned about more students dropping off of the healthcare rolls.
Senator Winters.
We're talking about the outbreak and its impact on students. I want to remind us that any outbreak like this, the broader community can also be affected. And I, you know, need to put that on record. And I think that we forget sometimes that, I'm glad to see public health bringing this to the forefront, and that's the role of public health to be there when we have outbreaks and to make certain that the population as a whole is immunized and taken care of. So I want to thank I did make my statement rather than a question, and I know that OHA is listening too.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move to the next panel. Charlie Fulton and Nikki Terzieff. Thank you.
This was small.
Ms. Terzieff, you okay. Mr. Fulton, come on, let's get started so we can make sure we have plenty of time for your testimony and questions. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you very much, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Charlie Fulton. I'm Deputy Director of Benton County Health Department in Corvallis. I'm also here representing the Coalition of Local Health Officials of Oregon. I'm the current chair, and that is the coalition that represents the 34 local health departments across the state. As you know, under Oregon Administrative Rule, local health departments are charged with investigating all infectious disease outbreaks, tracking data, and responding to and controlling outbreaks. In all epidemic and outbreak situations, it's imperative that local health and our partners at the states, colleges, and universities have the resources we need to stop the spread of disease as fast as possible. One of the tools that we need is the assurance that insurance companies will cover the cost of vaccines or other treatments necessary to prevent infection and disease transmission. And this bill will help assure that those important preventive treatments are available promptly and equitably to all exposed individuals. I want to emphasize the value of Oregon's college and university health services. As you've heard, they are the primary home for 138 Oregonians at 17 centers across the state. And they're an under-recognized and really underappreciated part of our medical support system and a really important partner to public health across the state. But because of the way they're governed, and as we heard, the federal laws they operate under, they're more likely than others to encounter out-of-network issues and cross-referencing issues. It's also important to know that in the current outbreak at OSU, local health departments have encountered many of the same out-of-network problems that student health services have. We've been looked to by many students who were home on weekends or on holidays, were unable to access their primary care home for an appointment on short notice. They came to local health departments, and we too found ourselves in the position of being refused reimbursement or having to notify them when we looked up their insurance records that no, we weren't in network, and it would be an out-of-pocket cost to them because of the restrictions, the in-network restrictions on their coverage. So this isn't a problem that's only restricted to university health services. Also want to note Senator Winter's comments and make an important note that this isn't a problem restricted to meningococcal disease or to colleges and universities. Oregon's health departments, along with the state, investigated 291 disease outbreaks in 2015, and that was a 14% increase from the year before. Urgent preventive treatment, like we're talking about here, is not necessary in every outbreak, but when it is necessary, it's important for us to be able to get that out rapidly and with as few barriers as possible. No matter whether a person is close by their medical home or whether they're traveling, working, or studying away from home. Oregonians are great travelers, and any Oregonian could be caught up in an outbreak and receive an urgent public health recommendation for immediate preventive treatment while they're skiing or fishing in the Cascades, attending a music festival in the Gorge, a rodeo in the East, or vacationing on the coast. In any of those cases, when a recommendation comes along, it's quite unlikely that anyone, no matter what their insurance, would find themselves with the only available service out of network. And this bill would help cover that gap and prevent the possibility of an exposed person having to travel a long distance, potentially delaying preventive treatment or expanding the scope of an outbreak as they travel back to an in-network provider. I'd also finally like to point out that this bill aligns with the modernization of Oregon's public health system. Communicable disease investigation and management is one of the four foundational programs in Oregon's modernized public health model. We know that transmission of disease-causing bacteria and viruses is not contained by county lines, by CCO boundaries, or insurance coverage areas. This bill will help Oregon's local public health departments work alongside others to provide more coordinated, accessible prevention services, even when the outbreak spreads across jurisdictional boundaries. CLO also supports the task force that's included in this bill. This is an important provision, so we really get the best minds around the table and figure out the details together with all of our partners on how to implement this the best way and overcome as many of the barriers that you and others have identified as possible. I urge your support for this bill.
Thank you. Ms. Terziev.
Thank you. Nikki Terziev here on behalf of the Oregon State Pharmacy Coalition. These are pharmacists across the state based either in health system settings or in Main Street clinics. We're very supportive of the bill, appreciative of Representative Nathanson bringing this forward. We look forward to being a part of the team and part of the conversation with the task force and know that this is an important piece of public health.
Thank you.
Okay. Questions?
Questions for this panel. Excellent. Thank you both. Thank you all for coming to take the time to testify on this. It's a really important bill. I will admit I'm slightly biased since I'm one of the chief sponsors. But I think all of us who've been involved in public health understand its importance. Good. Okay. Anything else on this bill, Ms. Ames? Okay. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3276. Anything for the good of the order?
Members of the committee, it does not look like we will have a meeting tomorrow.
Yay.
Unless we have an emergency bill.
Okay. So.
Let us know.
Okay.
Thursday?
Tomorrow is Thursday?
What day is today?
Wednesday. By definition. But,
right. As opposed to your agenda, which is Monday.
We're adjourned.
Mr. Sorensen.
That's where you threw her off.
Where'd you? Yeah.